Recently, former top-ranking tennis star James Blake, who was biracial, was mistaken for a suspect in a cell phone scam while he was standing casually in front of an upscale hotel in Manhattan. A police officer suddenly tackled him, slammed him to the ground, and handcuffed him. He was released without apology 15 minutes later. I want you to take a moment and close your eyes and imagine that you are the mother of James Blake. Imagine what you are feeling. Imagine that this is your child, your handsome, elegant, successful child. New York Police Department Commissioner Williams has now apologized to you, but emphatically denied that racism had anything to do with this police officer's actions.
I'm not yet ready to accept that conclusion, especially after watching my son get trailed by police cars as a teenager, and in the light of what's been happening in this country for the last year or so. I had hoped that my son might be able to avoid situations like this one after becoming the number four tennis player in the world during a nearly 15-year pro career. You would think, you know, in the circles he travels in, that he'd be safe. But obviously you're never safe. James called me Wednesday afternoon to alert me to what happened before I might see it on the news. I could tell how shaken up he was. I'm still frightened by what happened. It's scary. And it will be scary from here on out. Because if that happened in broad daylight outside the Hyatt, it makes you wonder what else could happen. I want to just begin by saying that I know this is a challenging subject that I've chosen this morning, and I hope, don't think we're going to have time to have a conversation about it, but I encourage you to call me or email me, and maybe we can even schedule a conversation at some point, because this is a challenging subject.
Black lives matter.
All lives are sacred.
Police officers' lives matter.
All lives are sacred.
Native American lives matter.
All lives are sacred.
The lives of people living with disabilities matter.
All lives are sacred.
Asian lives matter.
All lives are sacred.
White lives matter.
All lives are sacred. I have been in tears much of the last couple of weeks, preparing for this service, reading about racism in our country. But my pain is nothing compared to what African Americans have experienced. These last 3 years, that pain has become more public than it is in most years, but the harassment and deaths of black men by police is something most blacks experience in their own lives or in the lives of those they know and love. Trayvon Martin in 2012. Asthmatic Eric Garner, remember, I can't breathe. Michael Brown. 12-year-old Tamir Rice playing with a toy gun. Freddie Gray in Baltimore. Not all of those were police. This one wasn't. This past June, I'm sure that you all will remember that a white gunman killed 9 blacks at a Bible study meeting in church. In church, studying the Bible, praying by a white man they had welcomed into their midst. Police officers' lives matter too. In one of the other churches that I served, we had a police officer and a couple people who had previously been police officers who hated some of the things that were happening and yet also felt that they were being told that their lives didn't matter. They go out on a daily basis not knowing who or what awaits them. They may have just seconds to make life or death decisions. I believe that most of them are not racist. They're honest, dedicated, and courageous people who want to make the world a safer, better place. I also suspect, however, that many of them, like me, like I suspect many of us in this room, may hold unconscious prejudices no matter how much we try to fight against them, that make it more likely that they will respond with violence to a black or brown face than to a white face. They may not even know it. Those subconscious attitudes are part of what makes it so difficult to solve the race problems in this country. And some of you may have seen the studies where the researchers give people the face of a white person or a black person or a brown person and give them only seconds to make a decision about whether they will shoot or not. And there's a marked difference in the response. It's difficult, however, to get hard data on some of these issues. Two recent studies by the Washington Post and the Guardian give us something. They suggest that police will kill approximately 1,000 people this year. I should say that's about twice as many as the police statistics mark down, but many of the statistics, many are not reported. During the period of the study, African Americans were three times as likely to be killed as their percentage of the population where they lived. Approximately a third of them were unarmed. Twice as many were unarmed as were in white killings. Perhaps as important, maybe more important, there are no reliable records of how many people are pulled over for minor infractions of the law, driving 2 or 3 miles above the speed limit, failure to turn on a turn signal, nor is it possible to reliably estimate the racial breakdown on such incidents. Certainly, a hugely disproportionate number of blacks are in prison. There are statistics on that. Many for nonviolent crimes that would not be cause for prison in most countries in the world. In poor urban neighborhoods, black and brown boys routinely have multiple encounters with the police, even though they may have done nothing wrong. Once they're stopped, police frequently search them without any evidence of wrongdoing, no probable cause, making it more likely that people of color, especially poor people of color, will get caught for minor infractions than young whites who will do the same thing and get away with it. Parents of black children find it necessary to have the talk with their young boys. No, not the birds and bees, though they probably do that as well. No, the talk about how to act when a police officer stops you so you won't get hurt. Because it's not just as the cases we hear about on television that they know about. It's their brothers and sons and husbands that often have had frightening encounters with the police.
Attorney Brian Stevenson, a Harvard Law-trained young man, is the author of the bestseller Just Mercy, a story of justice and redemption. Some of you may have read it by now. He's the founder of Equal Justice Initiative, a legal practice that defends the poor and those denied justice by our legal system. In the book, he tells this story of his own brush with the law. It was once again approaching midnight as I left the office for home. The radio station was hosting a retrospective on the music of Sly and the Family Stone. I parked just steps from our new front door, just as Sly was starting Hot Fun in the Summertime. The moment was too good to let pass, so I remained in the car singing along. Soon after the song came on, I had been there for about 15 minutes when I saw a flashing police light approaching. It was one of the special Atlanta SWAT cars. The officer had a spotlight on the vehicle, and they directed it at me sitting in the car. Eventually, two police officers got out, ominously dressed in military style, black boots with black pants and vests. Still believing that they couldn't really be after me, I got out of my car intending to go home. The police officer walking toward me drew his weapon and pointed it at me.
Move, and I'll blow your head off. Put your hands up.
I put my hands up and noticed that he seemed nervous. I began saying, "It's all right, it's okay," over and over again. Finally, I said, "I live here. This is my apartment." The officer's hands were shaking. A second officer cautiously approached me. He grabbed me by the arms, pushed me against the back of my car.
"What are you doing here?"
"I live here. My roommate's inside. You can ask him."
"I want to see your driver's license."
I told him it was in my back pocket, and he fished my wallet out from my pants. The other officer was now leaning inside the car, going through all my papers. I knew that he had no probable cause to enter my vehicle, and he was conducting an illegal search. I was about to say something when I saw him open the glove compartment. Opening objects in a parked vehicle was so incredibly illegal that I realized he wasn't paying any attention to the rules, and so saying something about it would be pointless. There was nothing interesting in the car. The neighbors began to come out and started talking about burglaries in the neighborhood. Ask him about my radio and my vacuum cleaner. Another lady asked about her cat, who'd been absent for 3 days. After making me stand bent over the back of the car for a long time while they found nothing and found no outstanding complaints against me, they let me go. They told me someone had called about a suspected burglar. There'd been a lot of burglaries in the area. Far from apologizing, they told me I should be happy they let me go. Jewish lives matter.
All lives are sacred. Many of us may think of Billings, Montana, as one of the more conservative areas of the country. In 1993, somebody threw a cinder block through the window of a young boy who had a menorah in his window. Glass shattered all over his bed, but luckily he was out of the room and he wasn't hurt. A teacher who heard about this story, however, was concerned. She spoke to her minister about an idea she had. Let's invite our children to make menorahs to put in their windows. The editor of the Billings newspaper heard about the plan and wrote an editorial calling on Billings residents to come together to support their Jewish neighbors. The paper even put an outline of a menorah for their readers to cut out. Soon thousands of windows in Billings revealed menorahs. The harassment didn't stop right away, but it died down in the face of the unified support of the town.
Gay lives matter.
All lives are sacred. If you've been around here for a while and you come every Sunday, you do all come every Sunday, right? Yeah, okay. Well, I have told this story before. You may or may not have heard it. Unitarian Universalist minister Rob Hardies was a young gay man, recently out. He left his home and moved to Portland, where he thought was a mecca for young gay men. But he moved there just as a movement got started to change the Constitution in Oregon to prohibit same-sex marriage. He was despondent. One day he walked by a large old church with pink ribbons tied around the entire block and hate-free zones on its walls. Rob says he would never have walked in the doors of that Unitarian Universalist church had the sign simply said, "All are welcome." He had been burnt too many times by too many people, too many churches. Black lives matter. All lives are sacred. But if we are to stand with our African-American brothers and sisters, Rob said, we need to be very clear, very specific and very public that we share their pain. Yes, all lives matter, but in this country, in this political climate, we need to expressly name, who we mean when we say that. I will never forget the time, probably 20 years ago, when someone called our church, and the church secretary told me they seemed really nervous, and she wanted to know, did this church really do gay marriages? It was so scary to approach a church, even though she'd heard the church was welcoming. I personally would love to see a sign on this building, which was built by freed slaves, that says their lives matter, that their descendants' lives matter, that they have inherent worth and dignity. Yes, all lives matter. All lives are sacred. But right now, our African-American brothers and sisters need to know that we mean them when we say those words. It would be an act of courage on our part, of witness, of who we are and what we stand for what better expression of embracing diversity, and working for justice in the world, is there. But even more important than signs that say Black Lives Matter are our actions. Last year, when about a quarter of this congregation went to the Leesburg Town Council to stand with the NAACP in support of the creation of a diversity commission, our actions said Black Lives Matter. When the UUCL board wrote letters to the Loudoun County School Board this summer to ask them to reconsider their decision to name a middle school for a man who had been Speaker of the House during the years when Jim Crow laws were passed requiring segregation, our actions said Black Lives Matter. Right now, UUCL is exploring whether we should take a stand in support of saving one of the few remaining African-American cemeteries. We are saying that Black history matters. We may be called upon soon to support the NAACP's attempts to preserve Black history at the Loudoun County Courthouse. All lives matter, but they matter one at a time. Black, Native American, Hispanic, Asian, Caucasian, police, gay, Jewish, Muslim, they each are precious. They each are sacred. But let us stand and march and sing and hang banners and witness to the world that we would become a land of many colors, many faiths, many abilities, a rich tapestry woven together by love. May it be so. Please join us in our closing hymn, number 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song. Join me in the unison words of Extinguishing the Chalice, printed in your order service. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. All lives matter. Your life matters. My life matters.